Welcome, welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood, Matthew Davis, and the Roto-Gut, Vlad Settler.
What is going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Vlad Settler. I'm here with Matthew, Matty Wood, Davis, and we're recording on Tuesday, March the 14th. And Matt, we glad to have you back. We had Scott Genstead fill in. We actually did you a favor not having to get into those second tier pitchers, man. That was quite a beast of a little project there, and didn't even really get to everyone as much as we would like to.
Yeah, that's a lot to cover. I was kind of glad that I wasn't able to participate in that podcast. Thanks to Scott Genstead for filling in. He does a great job over at RotoWire, and that's a very vital part of fantasy baseball, right? Is that second half of the draft and getting those pitchers, late in the game and getting the profits from them. So kind of holding my cards just a little bit on that one, since I do like to spill the beans, so to speak, or be rather honest when it comes to my analysis or my takes on a player. So it was kind of nice for me to skip out and just hold back just a little bit.
Yeah, it's that time of year where, it's getting wild, right? We've got the New York main events happening live this upcoming weekend. We've got basically the first main events rolling out this weekend online. I've got my first one on Saturday, and then, of course, Las Vegas the following weekend. So it is the hot and heavy season as we get to about a little over 2 weeks before baseball kicks off for opening day.
Yeah, it's really exciting. You and I are starting to ramp up the intensity of the articles that we are distributing at ftnfantasy.com. You're going to be having this year's Yelich piece come out rather soon. I just released my a player I'm fading in each round, rounds 1 through 5. This week, I'll also be having a player that I'm fading in rounds 6 through 10 coming out at ftnfantasy.com. And then the in-season content is going to be rolling out very soon, right? We have Fab in is it 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks, something really soon. So you're going to be having that piece come out. So if you haven't subscribed with us, if you like the work that we're doing at over at FTN Fantasy and you enjoy the podcast and you haven't subscribed, you can do that going to ftnfantasy.com. You can use promo code FTNPOD to get 20% off. And if you have already, we greatly appreciate it. Be sure to join the Discord, ask us questions. Vlad and I, and then there's other experts in there as well, like Eric Cross, etc. And then on top of that, we will be talking closers today, relievers, I should say. And I'm going to be doing a closer report, and I've already shared it with Vlad, and it's going to be on a Google Sheet, and I'm going to try and have it be as aesthetically pleasing as well as clear and concise, and pretty easy to read. So that will be also available coming soon for the in-season content at ftnfantasy.com. So there's a lot of good stuff coming on, and it's ramping up in a hurry, and we will be in Las Vegas in 1 week.
Yeah, man, can't wait. And just to add on, if you are a subscriber to FTN, do yourself a favor, bookmark this site, and it's basically our tools page, ftnfantasy.com/MLB/tools. And that's basically a place where you can be one click away for all the things that Matty had just mentioned, including the projections, our 15 team ranking sheet, our 12 team cheat sheet, underdog best ball rankings, and NFBC cutline points rankings, all the articles from our team. And also, if you get a chance, now's kind of a good time to go back and look at some of those draft strategy articles from when our draft guide actually came out in late December. And a couple of those pieces that I wanted to point out would be Jenny Butler's NFBC roster construction piece and then Steve Weimer's article on scarcity. So a couple of great pieces there that were written in late December that are very much in season, I would say, for now. And one final note here is we have a new sponsor on board. The FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast will be sponsored by Prediction Strike, and we'll have more information about them in future episodes. And but definitely check them out. They're basically a sports stock market. So once the MLB season starts getting going, you can basically sort of buy and sell your favorite players. Pretty much kind of like fantasy, but in a stock sort of way. Basically investing in your favorite athletes, but they're actually the first on market here. So they're a great site. They're at predictionstrike.com. So make sure you check them out. closers, relievers, bullpens. It's something that we're all incredibly obsessed with. It's an inevitable part of our analysis, our study, and our construction for fantasy baseball. Of course, if you are in a standalone league, a home league, you know, you can perhaps deprioritize saves. You can punt in certain cases. Of course, you have to be strong everywhere else. But in a lot of the contests that folks are playing at the NFBC, with the national component, national contest with the overall prize component, like the main event, the draft champions, the OC, closers are important. They're super. You basically can't really win an overall without at least being somewhat competitive there. You don't have to be 80th, 90th percentile, but you have to have some saves there, and it's not something you could ignore entirely. And then, of course, we've seen the landscape change over the last few years. If you recall, you know, just 7-8 years ago, how many guys were getting 30 plus saves? You always have a handful of guys with 40 plus, occasionally some 50. And you've only had a few closers with even over 40 saves over the last few years. I think even in, what was it, 2019, or was it 2018? And there was a season not too long ago where there was nobody even that had more than 40 saves. And then so many of these bullpens are incredibly fluid. A lot of the managers don't know what's going on or have not yet determined how their bullpens are going to set up. And some of them will just be committees all year. And of course, saves, as I mentioned, super important to get. So that's kind of my where I wanted to kick things off. And before we get into the tiers, wanted to ask you how you have been attacking the closers and saves and bullpens, and how you plan to sort of shift gears from these draft champions where you have 50 rounds and you can load up on a bunch of relievers late and sort of handcuff and things like that. Whereas now you're moving into something where you've got the fab component, yet you don't necessarily want to be chasing a lot of saves during the year, and you still want to get them. How are you shifting from DCs to this, and how are you addressing the closers?
In DCs, I was definitely adamant on securing one of the top. Each person has a different, you know, threshold or cutoff when it comes to ranking or you know, putting in their tiers for the top one or two. But for me, in my 400 DCs, Edwin Diaz, Emmanuel Clase, Josh Hader, those were priorities for me. And then some, for the most part, skipping out and then just taking a bunch of shots on guys with good stuff, or it wouldn't take a lot for them to get an opportunity due to the pecking order, et cetera. Team context always plays a part. You mentioned how the scarcity for the category is continuing to go down because we're seeing more teams use a committee approach. The high leverage leaders aren't always necessarily, the best pitcher going in high leverage situations isn't always necessarily pitching in the ninth inning. We're going to see that with Edwin Diaz, who's the 1-1 of relievers. And Emmanuel Clase, had him last year, and he was awesome. Those two, right? Those are going to be the top two that we get in into. But those are the two because they have the least amount of warts or question marks, I should say. And potentially those are the two that we're not really questioning anything, but there has been word, right? Edwin Diaz will likely get used in an eighth inning situation at times. And we've seen in the past with Tito Francona and the Cleveland Guardians where Emmanuel Clase, if it's a 4-run game, Tito still treats that as a save opportunity. So, or a closing situation for his best reliever, which is Clase. So no one's really just, yeah, he's always going to pitch the ninth and that's just the way it's going to be. Right. And now we're seeing usage with back-to-backs. We're seeing teams scale back on that because of effectiveness. On a back-to-back, you know, Kenley Jansen could be an example of that in the past where he's getting the lion's share of saves, but look at how he's being used the second time around on a back-to-back. So limiting that is going to decrease volume as well. So I think it's really important to get back to your initial question, to pony up early. I know that it doesn't look cool and it doesn't feel like you're winning your league or even, you know, contending for the overall when you make one of these early selections, when you're looking at a dollar valuation and the best reliever in Edwin Diaz or Class A's point, you know, earning the low $30, right? And that's like what we would think of as a best case scenario. And whereas they're going in the second round on average in a 15-team league, there's guys like Tatis or Pete Alonso or Mike Trout, and you look at them and go, wow, they can earn me $40+. These guys could be first round value, et cetera. And then you start to shy away. And then the more you shy away, you start to dig yourself a ditch. So I don't want to dig a ditch. I want to secure one of these top guys that I'm super confident in, and I'm willing to spend that early draft capital, because I've fucked up a lot of picks in the past, third round picks, second round picks, fourth round picks. So if I'm able to not screw up one of these picks right here and know that I'm building my foundation, it goes so much further in the draft, the flexibility that you have, and then how much aggressiveness you're going to have to be using in fab as well, just because you already have your solid foundation piece and you're going to be feeling good about that. Plus you're going to be taking shots later on in the draft if you choose to go that path. So loaded answer to your question there. But before we get into the players, that's kind of how I feel about the landscape of relievers.
Yes. And I feel in the 12 team contest, at least the online championships with the overall component, I feel like the closers come at a little bit of a better cost, a little bit mm-hmm. better, I guess, opportunity cost, because they are going slightly later, like a Kenley Jansen, who might be going somewhere at the early fifth and a 15 teamer, you'll be able to grab them, you know, sometimes in some drafts I've seen like beyond pick 90. And it really just depends on each draft. It's something you have to monitor and manage throughout each draft. But obviously these main events are wild. And I mean, yeah, for sure, Edwin Diaz and Emmanuel Clase are going to be firmly entrenched in the middle of the second round. There's the opportunity cost of giving up a big bat that you would be grabbing there. But if that is part of your draft plan, once you do know your KDS slot and it just works out where you are looking to target a Diaz or a Class A in the second round, you really sort of have to make sure you map it out properly and really make sure that you're comfortable with that type of build and make sure to create alternative plans. Look and see what your team would look like if you did pass on your preferred closer target in the second round, you know, went with a hitter or pitcher, and then figured out where you may want to grab your first one a little bit later. Just so many ways to build it. It's, of course, always personal preference. And, you know, Edwin Diaz, he is the 101, as you mentioned. I do think there are some leagues you've seen Class A go ahead of him, but obviously the strikeout differential is massive. If you're looking at just last season alone, I mean, a 50% strikeout rate for Edwin Diaz is absolutely bananas. Almost nearly double Emmanuel Class A's. Class A was at 28.5% last season. And Diaz, I mean, he's burned folks before. You think back to the 2019 season, he was coming off in that draft season. He was traded to the Mets or signed with the Mets, and coming off a year where he basically had an ERA under 2. He scored 57 saves, pitched 73 innings, and he was in, you know, a 44% strikeout. He was an absolute beast, and he stunk the following season. Yeah, 7 losses, only 26 saves. He basically had an ERA over 5.5. And, you know, you kind of see that fluctuation year to year. Like if folks are projecting another 50% strikeout rate this season, hey, might be a bit much, right? I mean, last year he was at 35% the year, full season before that, 39, 44 the previous year. It really sort of fluctuates. But I think for the most part, folks are expecting a nice, dependable season out of him, and, you know, probably 100-plus strikeouts. So I have slight trepidation, and only because there are some closers I like a little bit later who may not have quite the Diaz season, but I think are basically, to me, just as safe. And then, obviously, Class A, I mean, that dude is, he's impressive. Even better ratios than Diaz last year. A 7.3 whip. Pinpoint control, his 4% walk rate or under 4% was the best among all closers. And I recall something that our friend of the pod and has a pod of his own, John Fish, had mentioned to me. He thinks Class A is basically like the safest pick you can take in the first 30 picks. And there's some, there's something that makes sense about that.
Yeah, I'm actually adamant on Edwin Diaz being numero uno. Last year led the league for relievers with a 42.6% K minus walk rate. So strikeout minus walks, giving him the only reliever among qualified relievers to have one north of 40%. A pitcher that we're going to get into a little bit later on didn't qualify due to innings pitch, but Diaz comfortably led in that department. He also led in swinging strike rate at 24.7%. And then he was also top 10 in fastball velocity at 99, averaging 99 miles per hour on the fastball velocity. So everything there is still in line for him to truly be elite. The Mets are doing everything they can to improve their team around them. It's hard to predict, you know, having him have more saves than we've seen in the past, but I think everything he's done last season is sustainable. So I'm going to slightly lean towards him as the number one guy. Love Class A as well. And then once we start diving into these other guys, it's going to be interesting to see the love or hate for Josh Hader as he's being considered as at the top of this second tier, I would say, because of where we're looking at the ADP, right? In a 15-team main event, we'll call it. Diaz and Class A would be a second-round ADP. Hader, though, I think should be going with those guys, to be quite honest with you. I think that he's up there with them. So if you're getting a little bit of a discount on him and there's somebody that you're really, really high on the second round and you do want early draft capital on a reliever, I'm okay with Josh Hader as well. I know people might mention, you know, the yips or the hiccups that he had when he was traded over to San Diego, but he's publicly spoken about that. His velocity was down just a little bit in spring. So people are seeming to shy away from him, but we've seen that in the past with him, and he's going to get a massive amount of work in the ninth inning. So I'm pretty comfortable with him. And Iglesias, actually, I'd like to mention him because I know that he's kind of going as the top one of the top five as well. But he did have a 7% dip in his K minus walk, which kind of concerns me. He's 33 years old. I know that you like him a lot. I believe that you actually have him projected for the most saves this season, tied with Edwin Diaz. You do. So, yeah, those are the couple concerns that I have with Iglesias. So if I'm choosing a reliever in that area and I'm comfortable on drafting a closer, I would probably go with Jordan Romano over Devin Williams and Raisel Iglesias right there. What about you? It's Iglesias for you, though.
Yeah, I mean, first I'll mention Josh Hader. I agree with you that I believe that he belongs in the Diaz Class A tier. I think as far as walk rate, I think it's something that's always been a concern with him. He's usually a 9%+ guy on the walk rate. I guess, you know, similar to Diaz. I mean, you know, Diaz does have some control issues, but for the most part is pretty dominant. But Josh Hader, I mean, first of all, the team context is phenomenal. Obviously, the offense is going to be even better. Plenty of save opportunities. I imagine they'll be among the league leaders there as far as save opportunities are concerned. And I really think he's somewhat discounted, even though he's a mid third round pick. Yeah. I mean, I think it's really because you look at that ERA of 5.22 last season, and you think back about how many teams that he crushed during certain stretches. But there are a lot of personal things, I guess, that occurred as far as, first of all, with the trade rumors before the season. He was dominant in April, didn't allow a single earned run. His wife was pregnant at the time. She ended up having some health complications in her third trimester from pregnancy, and he was traded. And it was just a really difficult personal year for Josh Hader. Once he did get to San Diego, a few more blips on the radar, but he ended up finishing pretty strong. His last 10 innings in September, 13-2 on the strikeouts per walk, and just one earned run allowed for Josh Hader down the stretch there. So I think he's fine. I think he's solid. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he ends up having just as good of, if not better, season as those top two guys. But as far as where he goes there, I think it's a solid price.
Yeah.
On the next tier, guys, I do have a strong preference. I think Iglesias, Devin Williams, Jordan Romano, and Ryan Pressly are kind of that batch there. I think there's a little bit of a gap there as far as the tiers are concerned for most people, where it then goes to Ryan Helsley of St. Louis, Kenley Jansen, and Felix Bautista. I do like Iglesias the most of this group. He had basically just one difficult season, and that was back in 2019 when he was with the Reds, a 4.16 ERA. Otherwise, he's basically posted five full seasons. We're just excluding 2020, five full seasons with an ERA under 2.60 and a WHIP under one, essentially for the last 2.5 seasons. Great control. His 5% walk rate, or slightly under 5%. Is there are only two relievers, better in that regard. That's Class A and Hendricks. I think one of the reasons why maybe his price tag is a little, sort of underwhelming. I don't know if that's the right term, but it's part of the reason is they haven't really named an actual closer. I think most people assume it's Iglesias, but they do have a pretty strong bullpen there if something does happen. You know, there are obviously guys there that can step in, no problem. I think AJ Minter comes to mind. So he is my favorite here. I think Romano is the safest. Jordan Romano, the Blue Jays, excellent. He's dependable, consistent, and a sub-3 Sierra the last couple years since he took over as closer, an ERA right around 2 since he took over as closer. Last year allowed just 4 home runs all year. The offense should be better. So I think Romano is absolutely fine. Where are you with Devin Williams and Ryan Pressly? Super quick. Devin Williams, I think walk rate is usually the main concern. It's over 12% over the last couple of years. Strikeouts are elite, near 40%. Very little competition in that bullpen. It's basically Matt Bush and a bunch of guys we don't really know. And then with Ryan Pressly, great team context, great skills. He's had a few DIL stints here and there. Actually, I call it the Friday last year. You remember the movie Friday? My neck and my back. So yeah, he had both neck and back issues last year. But I like Pressly too. He's just not my favorite of this group.
Age. I think it's the age with Pressly. And then, like you mentioned, we are now seeing him miss some time. So as father time gets a hold of him, we're still seeing a good strikeout rate, which is awesome for him. So the K-minus walk rate is still really solid. The team context is great. Dusty Baker's super old school, so he's going to get a lot of burn in the ninth inning. But last year he did miss, Ryan Pressly, that is, missed 38 days on the IL with inflammation in the knee. And then you mentioned, you know, the neck spasms as well. I actually like Felix Bautista quite a bit. So I haven't really been getting the guys going ahead of him. And I do believe that Bautista's small, tiny dip that we saw because of the knee and shoulder issues in spring are now going to completely go away and dry up, because he did pitch today. He was touching 99. And from all reports, he's going to pitch again, I believe, on Friday, and wants 4 or 5 more outings before he feels like he's ready to go in full real game action. But from all reports, he sounds good, looks good. I think that we see him get a lot of burn, and he's got a really long rope as well. If I'm looking at the closer report here, when you mentioned Raisel Iglesias and the lack of competition, another guy I would look at is Joe Jimenez when looking at the closer report. He's had previous success there. He has a nice K-minus walk rate. But anywho, going back to Baltimore and Felix Bautista, lack of competition as well, right? When I'm looking at this closer report that we have, Brian Baker, Michael Givens, Dylan Tate, who's currently hurt. So, and then Perez, I just don't think that there's really any competition here. And now that he's healthy and he's looking good, feeling good, he's in his reports too. Felix Bautista always sounds very, very confident. And I like that. I think that he's a budding superstar when it comes to relievers and closers. So he's got a very high star rating. So we're going to have star ratings for each team and situation when it comes to, you know, sort of rating how the solidarity is when it comes to closing. And Felix Bautista is really high for me. So I like his current price, and he's going after some of these guys. So, Yeah, I would prefer him.
Yeah, I think he's a nice and solid pick. I think if it wasn't for, recovering from offseason surgery and dealing with a little, you know, the issue with the knee and just getting back into pitching, I think he would probably, I mean, that's why the price dropped, really.
Yeah.
He dropped a little bit below Kenley, but I think in main event drafts, you'll probably see Bautista going ahead of him, except for maybe, what's our guy, Tozawa, high stakes guy who loves his Boston guys. He'll definitely take Kenley over Bautista.
What about Devin Williams, real quick? We kind of brushed, he's important, right? Shouldn't he? Stuff and job security. I mean, this dude's posting 40% strikeout rates. The walk rate's his only blemish. I don't think that there's any competition, and I don't really buy into, I was upset because Josh Hader was traded and I liked my high leverage role. He's going to get paid more pitching in the ninth inning, and the Brewers used him like that. So, I mean, he's going to be happy with that because his contract at the end of the day, and when it comes to arbitration, et cetera, is going to end up being better for him. His barrel rate that he allowed last year was 0.9%. Mm-hmm. The walk rate. So the walk rate, career walk rate for Devin Williams is 11.5%, which you don't like to see that. But to be honest with you, when it comes to relievers and especially a closer, if you're not giving up home runs, I really don't give a shit if you're going to walk a guy or two, because it's going to matter with how many fly balls, how hard you're getting hit, and if you're getting giving up the home runs. And last year he had a 0.30 home run per nine fly ball rate, that is, with Devin Williams, And for his career, it's at 0.58. So he doesn't give up home runs. So I'm willing to kind of be all right with the walk rate, especially because when you look at his whip with that walk rate, 1.01. Spectacular.
The only thing I've ever heard negative from analysts or anyone I know about Devin Williams is just like a feel, right? And obviously I trust, you know, gut feeling. It depends who's gut it is, of course. But Devin Williams, man, he's locked in. We've been waiting for him. He's been like the top middle reliever drafted for so long. We've been waiting for Hader to get traded for quite a while for him to emerge. And that's really what he did. When he's healthy, he's a beast. And he was down the stretch last season. Blows a save up here and there, but the leash is really long. Like, you know, you got Matt Bush, 37 years old. He's basically the only one with any closing experience in this pen. It's a really, it's just not the pen of old that we were used to with the Brewers here. So guys like Peter Strzelecki, Hobie Milner, the lefty, basically the only lefty in the pen. Javi Guerra, who I thought was older than he is. He's only 27. And then of course the ghost of Bryce Wilson. I don't know what he's going to be doing there, but yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, Devin Williams,
Trevor Rosenthal, baby.
Is he there?
Hey, you're not looking at the closer report, Vlad. It's a deep dart, but yeah, he is there. But no, I think that Devin Williams and Jordan Romano, man, they could pop as RP1, right? The number one overall as well. You mentioned that with Hader. Manager tendencies, I think that's huge as we continue to go along this list of relievers. I mentioned with Ryan Pressly, one of my favorite things about him is the manager tendency. So if he's healthy and the manager's Dusty Baker, your rope's going to be real long, and you're likely just going to continue to stay in the ninth inning role. So yeah, I think Craig Counsell in Milwaukee is also kind of with that old school mantra. You know, you used Hader like that, and then we saw how he used Devin Williams. So I'm good with both of those guys, and Bautista is my preference in this area.
Yeah. And for the most part, just the way I've been building, like I just haven't been comfortable drafting that closer in the second round. And to me, it is because guys like Devin Williams, Iglesias, Felix Bautista, Jordan Romano, these guys are available in the fourth, fifth, maybe even sometimes sixth round, maybe not main events, but I'd much rather the way my builds have been working out. It just is a more comfortable build for me personally. If Diaz and Clase are the 1-2 by a nice wide margin again this season, I wouldn't be surprised, but I really don't think that's what's going to end up happening this season.
Do you have any exposure to Kenley Jansen?
No, it's really nothing more than just, again, a gut feeling. My old joke could just be indigestion, but I don't know. I'm not sure if I get the best vibes from Boston and the Red Sox, and certain things like his fly ball rate going up from 44% to 55% last year. Moving to the East. He lived in LA his whole life and went to Atlanta. Now up in Boston, but I don't know. I don't think they're gonna, I don't think they're gonna get as many save opportunities as they have in the past. I'm kind of a little concerned about the offensive support, and he's older and he's had health problems and heart problems in the past. I know most of these things are behind him, but I love Kenley Jansen. He's basically one of the best, if not the best reliever over the last decade. But I just have not been comfortable clicking on him there.
Yeah. Another new place, right? So third team in three seasons. You mentioned the fly ball rate jumping, another year older. So now he's coming into his age 35 season. And being Dodger fans, you and I, we've seen a lot of Kenley Jansen in our lifetime and since 2010. So over a decade of him pitching for the Dodgers, and he takes his time and you see him taking big, deep breaths. You mentioned that he has the cardiac issues with the heart. And I think that we could see potentially a slight decrease, a small tick down in velocity, especially as the season goes on and the clock's ticking and he's not able to gain his breath, or things are moving a little bit too fast for him. I don't want any part of that. And even if we didn't really have the pitch clock, I just don't think that I was going to be in on him at this current cost. He's kind of where I'm already like, I don't know, man. Like I'm right here. This is where I'm at in the market and why I want to second round, third round, fourth round, fifth round. And then I'm like, Kenley Jansen down. I'm, I'm kind of freaking out.
And in a 15 team league, I mean, not everyone is going to even have one of these top guys. I mean, we haven't even mentioned the guys that go in the next tier that I guess you can say are sort of safe, but obviously still have some concerns and some blemishes. But I think people need to really think about this. Yeah, Kelly Jansen, if you do think he's the end of this tier here, whether, you know, if he does fall in your draft, if you're willing to take him, or how you feel about him versus the guys that go after him. And if you're comfortable with your RP1 being, you know, Clay Holmes, Bednar, Alexis Diaz, one of these guys, because it does really start to get shaky. So, yeah, I don't know. I just don't have much Jansen so far.
He also his windup, right, and the time he takes to get from the bump to home for Kenley Jansen takes a while. And now we have these small, slight rules that are going to favor base runners. And he's already been one of the relievers that gives up the most stolen bases. There's just a lot of little things I feel like aren't going in the right direction for Kenley before the season has already, it hasn't even begun. I just don't think you're right. The gut. I mean, you even mentioned the gut. It's just these little things.
And our guts are stronger for teams that we're very familiar with and players we're obviously very familiar with. And of course, there's a chance that Jansen can adapt to this in spring training a little bit. And it isn't that much of an issue, but you're right. It's all these sort of little things that may add up for us. The last guy in this tier that we did not mention him, but I'm a big fan of his. And I really do hope he stays healthy for the course of the season, but that's Ryan Helsley, dude with the third fastest four seamer in baseball last season, behind a couple of guys we'll talk about in a bit, John Durant of Minnesota and Andrés Muñoz of the Mariners. But man, he throws right around 100 on the regular. Only four extra base hits allowed last year on that four seamer in nearly 150 plate appearances. Elite ratios, 125 ERA, 0.74 whip last season. Great team context. And really, I don't know, man. I know that very smart folks, very good at this, are seeing something that I guess I don't. Maybe it's like a little bias I have on him in his favor, where people are concerned the way that manager Ollie Marmol, I mean, he's only had one season of you know, track record, but like how he kind of uses closer, how they think he's going to be used. And I guess a lot of smart folks don't see 30 plus saves for Helsley, whereas I do. I mean, I could be absolutely wrong, but I'm just thinking last season down the stretch, that final month, he got seven of the final eight opportunities. The one he didn't get was, you know, kind of like on a back-to-back. I like him a lot. I mean, obviously Giovanni Gallegos is a good pitcher. It's a pretty good bullpen, but he's named their closer. Like everything I see is that it is Ryan Helsley. You know, some injury concerns over the last few years, but I mean, to me, he's the guy. I like him a lot.
Yeah. Awesome metrics. Injuries you did mention. So in 2019, he had the shoulder impingement. And then in 2021, he missed 31 days with a stress reaction in his right elbow. So a little bit of elbow, a little bit of shoulder, which isn't great, but last season he was healthy and we actually saw him in some of his outings. So he pitched in 54 games, Ryan Helsley, and finished with 64 and two thirds innings pitched. So we did see some of his outings come in high leverage where he was pitching multiple innings, we'll call it, or more than one inning, I should say, not multiple. And he only ended up registering 19 saves. So that's where the hesitancy or potential discount, right? Depending on how your outlook is for Helsley. But from a stuff and metric standpoint, he had the sixth highest swinging strike rate among relievers at 18.5%. He had the fourth highest fastball velocity that you mentioned at 99.6. And then his K minus walk rate was also absurd at 31%. So everything, from a metrics and skill standpoint is awesome. And again, if, like you said, if the role is there, like we saw at the end of the season, Helsley, Williams, I'll add Helsley to that, Williams and Romano clumping, and Bautista of the ones that I think can, we might be drafting them earlier next year, right? I know it seems early this year, but it potentially could cost more next year with these guys.
Yeah. And actually, so, I mean, I want one of these guys in most of my main events. I mean, there's that group of 9 or 10 guys. I'm probably going to leave the sixth round with at least one of those. It may not happen. If not, I'll have to adjust the plan, but that's kind of where I'm at. Feel pretty comfortable with it. Quick pop quiz. You know that Edwin Diaz added the O into his name. I mean, it is part of his middle name, but he's just going by Edwin O. Diaz now everywhere. I didn't know. So I didn't actually know what it was. So his middle name is Orlando, but his full name is Edwin Orlando Diaz LaBoy. I had no idea.
Sounds like he's a Michelin star chef as well.
Yes, he cooks.
Sounds like an awesome chef name.
Yeah, cooks a mean stuff. All right, tier four, tier five. We're looking at players that are let's kick off. Let's kind of end this tier because I think a lot of folks might think that these guys belong here, and one of them actually gets drafted around there, and that's the San Francisco Giants closer Camilo Duvall. And then we can throw Clay Holmes into the mix there for the Yankees. But how do you feel about these two? Have you been drafting a lot of them? Real quick on Holmes, obviously 2% barrel rate last year, just came on a big fab darling last season. I think we know that he won't be the only one getting save opportunities, but they have had some attrition in that bullpen lately. Tommy Conley and Lou Trevino are both injured, expected to start the season on the IL. They've got Michael King back. He was a dominant multi-inning reliever last season. Got a few other guys there. So, Jonathan LaCija. So where are you with Clay Holmes? And then Duvall, you got Taylor Rogers, the lefty in the mix. And Duvall at a 10.5% walk rate last season. The team was a little bit worse as well. I've been drafting Holmes and not as much Duvall, but I would not be surprised if it just kind of ends up being flipped and I got that one wrong.
So the Giants have Gabe Kapler as their manager, and we were talking about manager tendencies and Gabe Kapler and the front office with Farhan Zaidi in San Francisco. They've mixed things up in the past. Duvall did have the lion's share of the saves for the Giants last season, but they did bring in Rodgers and they paid him 3 years, $33 million, which isn't cheap whatsoever. So when you're bringing in somebody that has previous closer experience, that causes me to have hesitancy when it comes to Duvall. He seems like he's slowly been kind of creeping up and rising. The one thing that I do like about Duvall is the lack of competition, right? When you exclude Taylor Rogers, I just think that it's rather bleak. So when it gets to that and when push comes to shove, I think that Duvall could end up just gobbling up a bunch of saves that way. But I don't think that he should be going where he's going, or at least I'm not going to be drafting him there because I do have some sort of hesitancy as to, is he getting 70% of the saves? Is it 80%? And for me, with that question mark at this point in the draft, I would rather just spend earlier draft capital and get somebody that I don't have those concerns about. So for Duvall, I haven't really gotten any. And then Clay Holmes, it's sort of the opposite of San Francisco. When you look at their closer report, you have Jonathan Loaisiga, you have Michael King, Lou Trevino, Wandy Peralta, et cetera, right? So they have depth, and they've already mentioned that he won't be getting 100% of the share in the ninth inning. That is with Clay Holmes. And then he was also hurt for a little bit last year. And we saw the skills decline with him for a little bit midway through the season and with the lower back spasms. Back spasms, that's not great, right? So now you're dealing with the glutes and you're dealing with your hamstrings and stuff like that. So Holmes, I'm pretty much out on as well. I like the guy that pitches on the suckier team, and that's David Bednar with the Pittsburgh Pirates. I think we're getting a bit of a discount because he pitches on the Pirates, and then I think we're also getting a discount because they're supposed to trade him. But if you look at his contract, and last year we were worried about that, and they didn't trade him. So I like Bednar's stuff, and again, for competition and his role, manager tendencies, and what we've seen in the past, I think that Bednar, for me, is a better bang for your buck when it comes to those three, starting from the top going down. But there's somebody in here that I like the most, even more. Do you want me to touch on him, or do you want to keep going down the list before we get to him? Because he's kind of in the middle of there.
Well, I wanted to set up, just kind of cut off at a certain point, because David Bednar, Alexis Diaz, and Daniel Bard are all set closers for the most part on bad offenses, on bad teams. Mm-hmm. So I think they're a nice group to bunch together. And total side note, I can't believe I said Loaisiga when I know it's Loaisiga. But anyways, please, everybody forgive me. Before we go, just interesting to note that the Taylor Rogers now is going to be playing with his twin brother in San Francisco. Very interesting, mm-hmm. Nice little combo there. And remember, Taylor Rogers, man, he was the best closer in the first half of the season, and then completely imploded. Velocity went down. I mean, it was a kind of a very up and down season for him, kind of picked things back up at the end. But the end of the day, man, 31 saves for Taylor Rogers and an ERA near 5, which is way off the mark from his career rate, which was 3.3, I think, going into that 2022 season. So it'll be interesting how things shake out there. But yeah, Bard, Diaz, and Bednar. I'm with you on Bednar. I think obviously the issue is the amount of save opportunities. You know, 2 seasons ago when they were still a bad team, even though they didn't win a lot of games, like 60-something, they still ended up like 16th in save opportunities. Really wild. And then last season they went back down to, you know, near the bottom, and then Bednar missed some time. And he's obviously a great pitcher. When he pitches, there is a concern he could get traded to a team where he would not be the closer. So there's that. And then I don't know. I didn't want to step on your toes, but you were going to mention probably one of Diaz or Bard.
As my guy, like who I'm popping.
Yeah.
So, okay. So the guy that I like the most is Pete Fairbanks. I've drafted him in the 9th round. I've drafted him in the 10th round. I've drafted him in the 11th round. He was the pitcher that came in second in strikeout minus walk rate when looking at relievers. The only reason why he wasn't mentioned is because he didn't qualify because of the innings pitch. So when looking at Pete Fairbanks, if you're looking at a stuff and metrics standpoint, the Rays, the Dodgers, the Astros, they're really great at being able to fix a major key cog for a pitcher if they struggle in command and control. And we saw that with Pete Fairbanks. So that was Fairbanks's big issue in the past, was his walk rate. So we've seen in the past with Fairbanks, walk rates in the double digits, 2019, 2020, 2021. And then last season, it goes all the way down to 3.4%. So when you look at Pete Fairbanks, I think that people have 4 different outlooks. If you're me, you're looking at the stuff and metrics, you see that they just paid him. They're not going to be going to arbitration with him anymore. If he's healthy, which obviously that is a concern of the health, he's going to be the guy, and he's one of the best when he's on the mound. And so that's my outlook. And then there's the outlook of, well, it's the Rays. Look at Jason Adam. Look how many relievers got saves last year for the Tampa Bay Rays. And he's injured. So then there's the kind of I'm out on him outlook, when you're just skittish on the whole thing, the health, the team context, managerial tendencies, et cetera, from the past. And then there's the third person that's like, wow, he's really good, but he's going to split time. I don't know what to do with him. I'll draft him in like the 10th or 11th round. And then there's going to be the fourth person that's like somewhat optimistic like me and somewhere in the middle and hasn't drafted a reliever yet. And then they're going to probably feel the need to have to pop him. I'm okay with him being my reliever one if I miss out on that, like the top guys that I mentioned I like before. So Diaz down to Bautista in the few that I mentioned in between there. If I miss out, Pete Fairbanks is my target. Now, I don't want him to be my RP1 because of previous health. But if he is, I think I'm going to be okay with that. And I'll obviously have to probably pop him a little bit earlier than I need to just to secure that. But if I have, let's say, Felix Bautista or Jordan Romano, let's say Jordan Romano, we'll rose it up a little bit. I'm not going to feel the need to go, you know, overly aggressive for Fairbanks, but man, I would. If you can get him as an RP2, I think you could be in a really good situation, like with him and Romano or him and Bautista. And then the third one, as your RP1, or I'm sorry, if you're just fading him, I don't know, man. They all have we've all had injury risks as pitchers. They all have it. I'm buying into the fact that they paid him. And I'm buying into the stuff and the metrics, because when you look at the strikeout stuff and the whiff rates, and then you topple on that he was able to fix his command and control, he's truly elite. And if he's healthy and they paid him, they're likely going to give him. When he was healthy, he did get the lion's share by quite a bit too. If you look at their save pie in Tampa Bay, when he was healthy, he was getting the bulk of the saves. And it was rather clear, especially down the stretch and going towards the playoffs.
Yeah, you covered it pretty well there. I think most people always knew that Fairbanks was capable of kind of producing what we saw last season, where the numbers were just insane, with like the 2% barrel rate and the walks down considerably. Like, stuff wise, he's an elite guy. Price has moved up considerably. There's almost like an overall feel that after all these years of Kevin Cash kind of being the super progressive guy that first started using openers that wouldn't name a closer. Now there's just sort of this prevailing thought that, oh, all of a sudden, because Fairbanks is so good, no one else really stands out, although Jason Adam is pretty good, that he's just going to be the main guy. And I like that theory. I think it's very likely. And I think he may just sort of unofficially earn that role and be the top guy. My only concern really with Pete Fairbanks for the most part is, well, it's partially that. It's also the rising price. So this is a guy that I was able to snag in, you know, 12th, 13th rounds in draft champions a couple of months ago. And now he's got an ADP over the last 2 weeks of 128. And this is before the main events. I've seen him go. He's had a min of 91. So people are expecting him not only to be the main closer, but like one of the top guys. So I think that really is my only sort of my primary concern there with Pete Fairbanks.
That min pick you were saying in the 90s sounds like somebody like me that missed out on those top guys and was like, oh, I feel like this guy could be in that tier. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pop him now. Alexis Diaz. So, dude, does he look good? And wow, did you know he's related to Edwin Diaz?
I did.
Well, he does pitch for the Reds. His manager is David Bell. And I'm just going to kind of pump the brakes on the excitement. He could be a reliever that just crushes me this year because he does have the electricity. And he could potentially just run away with it. And David Bell could stick to what he did say, as he is our closer. So we've got to take the manager's word. We've got to trust the manager. Even though we've seen tendencies in the past, that say differently, there's two things though. Walk rate. So last year, 12.9%, that's a big problem, right? 13%. Then I mentioned, if you have a high walk rate as a reliever, but aren't giving up a lot of home runs, then it's okay. So he did only have, Alexis Diaz had a home run per nine rate of 0.71, which is really good. However, two problems. His fly ball rate was 54.5%, and he pitches at Great American Ballpark, which is number one in home run factor. So if you're giving up that many fly balls, the home run to fly ball rate itself, which was at 6.9%, which is nice, that could definitely regress back in the negative or I guess positive direction. And so we could see some home run problems potentially. And with the walk rates, then you see some implosions. With implosions and David Bell, we'll be betting on Lucas Sims in May. I mean, you know what I mean? So
yeah. It makes sense. I think part of the issue last year was the guys that were there. Lucas Sims got hurt in camp, and they had all these, you know, these random dudes and Art Warren saga, and just, you know, so much going on. There really was no one to step up. And Alexis Diaz pitched multiple innings many times in the first half of the season, really solidified himself as the top guy in that bullpen, had a stellar second half. Granted, the the ratios, obviously, you know, the ERA was maybe, you know, almost a run and a half lower than the indicators. I think indicators were like over three and the ERA close to two. But he's somebody, you know, Edwin Diaz is a little brother. He's got the stuff. But you're right. The ballpark is an issue. I do think he'll have somewhat of a leash. I do think other guys there will grab saves on occasion. But I like him. I mean, I don't mind him as an RP2. I feel a little bit more comfortable with him than I do as Bard, for example. Daniel Bard, 37 years old. Mm-hmm. He had a 221 BABIP last year. And again, same thing, ERA close to two. Indicators are over three, both the Sierra and the XFIP, obviously the bad home park. So yeah, this is an interesting range, I think. But yeah, you're right. Fairbanks is right there in the mix. You'll probably start to see him go ahead of Bednar if you haven't already. So yeah.
With the Diaz thing, I kind of, you know, I was like, kind of giving him the gnaw wave a little bit, but I will say, when looking at this entire tier though, Yohan Duran, right? Best fastball in baseball, going to be used as the high leverage pitcher there. So we're going to see other pitchers in Minnesota get burned as the closer as well. So yes, he will get some save opportunities, but we know that the range and outcomes for Yohan Duran and the ceiling in saves, the amount total in saves, isn't as high as it is with Alexis Diaz. So for me, when it goes to who am I going to draft, if choosing between one, I'm going to choose the guy that has the possibility of, you know, taking a bigger bite out of the saves pie. And so Diaz, for me, I'm going to like him more than Duran. Although I kind of crapped on Diaz for the fly ball rate in the park, I would much rather have this dude that still has the stuff and is being said to have the job. Bard, I don't like as well. Coors Field, old. If the velocity goes down, he could just fall apart. Scott Barlow's interesting to me. And then the Seattle Mariners relievers, are you good with them as an RP too?
Well, I mean, well,
it's just the weird spot to draft an RP too, right?
Well, so the guy that I think is going to be getting more save opportunities, at least for me early on, is going after him. And that's kind of why in my VDP rankings, I've got them close, but I'm not really drafting Munoz. I know the stuff there is excellent. I think the case of both him and Joan Duran, on Duran is interesting because you've got two guys who throw the hardest in baseball and have, killer stuff and could be, the next Edwin Diaz with ease if they were to be given that opportunity, right? Managers can change their mind anytime and be like, all right, this isn't a committee anymore. You're just like my guy. But I see a lot of people drafting them. To me, it just feels a little bit early and you're praying and hoping that at some point early on in the season, light bulb clicks on for these managers, Baldelli and Scott Servais, and be like, okay, this is my guy now. I don't necessarily know if that's going to be the case. And especially in Seattle, he's not that great, but Diego Castillo's still in the mix. Matt Brash hasn't had the best preseason, but at some point, he could be in the mix as well. I do like Paul Sewald. I am a big fan of his. But even when I draft him, I feel a little bit of concern because I knew Munoz is there going ahead of him, and I'm almost sort of betting, kind of going against the grain. With Yoan Duran, I do kind of like Jorge Lopez. I have been drafting him, since December, just because similar to Hader, he had some, not the exact type of, but he had some personal issues and with family, and he was, traded midseason, and his numbers suffered, dipped a little bit after that, but he really resurrected his career last season, turning into a full-time closer, full-time reliever. He was fantastic with Baltimore before they let him go because they had Felix Bautista. But I'm fine with Lopez. I think he would probably get the bulk of the save opportunities. He's obviously quite a bit cheaper. Obviously nowhere as talented as Duran. But I do like Jorge Lopez. I do like Paul Sewald. I guess I'm kind of betting against talent because the other two are more talented. But that's just where I am, right? It's all personal preference.
Jorge Lopez at 228. I wouldn't mind that at his cost as an RP2. But if I did miss out, like I was saying previously, I wouldn't mind taking a shot on him as like if you're now having to build your team, because if you do miss out on the top one or two tiers, you're already playing this game of of darts, right? I guess is what we're going to call it. And that's why you're seeing the draft capital that you're seeing. But with the Minnesota Twins, there's a couple of things going against Duran and his current cost. We did mention they like to use him in high leverage situations. Rocco Baldelli, we've seen in the past where he gave the bulk of the saves to Alex Colomé when he first became the manager for the Twins. But we know that he comes from the Rays tree. And we do know that he has mixed and matched in the past. And Lopez does have previous experience. Along with that, they also have Griffin Jacks, Caleb Thielbar, and Jorge Alcala is actually coming back. And he's interesting as well to me. So I think that they just have too many viable options to be drafting somebody. Well, that somebody is Yoan Duran at his current cost with his ADP of 116. So yeah, I'm out on him.
All right. So we now have basically, we'll run through the rest of these guys and the remaining situation. What's that?
Smorgasbord.
Yeah. So now it gets a little dicier. We're talking about guys going after round 15 in 15 teamers, basically real quick on the guys going between 200 and 300. You've got Carlos Estevez of the Angels, basically brought on board as the closer. I think because he had a little bit of some hiccups and lots of walks in a couple of outings in the spring, where apparently he may have been tinkering or trying some things out. He slipped a little bit, but obviously he's had the unfortunate situation of pitching in Coors Field for all those years. But he's somebody that I think could be interesting. A 3.5 career ERA away from Coors Field, a 1.26 WHIP, 25% K rate, 7% walk rate, throws a 97 mile per hour heater. They do have Jimmy Herget there, who I think is solid. They signed the veteran Matt Moore, a lefty who could get some save ops. So you got him. You got Alex Lang, who's easily now in the top 200. You can now move him up in that tier because people are all about Alex Lang, even though despite a little bit of a high walk rate, there really is no one else there. So let's talk about those two guys, just kind of touch on them real quick. We'll throw Kyle Finnegan of Washington in the mix, and then we'll also throw in a couple of odd committees. You got the Philadelphia stuff going on with Sir Anthony Dominguez and Craig Kimbrell. You've got the trio in Miami with Dylan Floro, the veteran who doesn't throw as hard as AJ Puck or Matt Barnes, who's had some issues over the past few seasons. So you've got that committee. So let's talk about them, and then we'll close out with the remaining guys.
I don't want to spend too much time on these guys because I don't really like any of them, to be honest with you. I like Jimmy Herget more than Carlos Estevez. I'm kind of staying away from the Philadelphia situation. Kyle Finnegan and Trevor May, those are the two that I have confidence in getting the saves currently. They pitch on two of the worst teams in baseball, but I'm confident that they're going to be getting the ninth inning work. So for me, those are the two that I like the most out of this group. The guy that has the best stuff would be Evan Phillips, but is he going to be the high leverage pitcher for the Dodgers? We don't know. But all in all, so going from Jose Leclerc, Alex Lang, down to Craig Kimbrell and in between, Trevor May is probably honestly my favorite when you exclude Jorge Lopez, who's going, good grief, 70, 80 picks earlier than him. So for me, Trevor May, he's the one that stands out to me. And then I'm kind of just out on most of these guys because there are quite a bit of dudes that I like going way later that I think either are getting a piece of this the work in the ninth inning, could potentially take over and get majority of the work in the ninth inning, or I'm just going to be using the first weekend because they're going to have good stuff and we're not using all of our starters. So a lot of usable guys in this next tier, but for me, yeah, Trevor May. And then I did mention Kyle Finnegan, but the price isn't nice where he's going. So I would just prefer Trevor May and the 100-pick discount or difference, I should say, not discount, because I don't know what they're going to earn me.
Yeah, and obviously Trevor May, he signed that one-year $7 million contract. Actually, it was kind of shocking with the A's, and he really hasn't been relevant in quite some time. He had that incredible season with Minnesota back in 2019, but saves wise, man, he's never had more than four in a season. Has basically been a middle reliever, some high leverage spots, but he was hurt for most of last season, and he was awful when he did pitch, part of it because he was hurt, but only 25 innings, an ERA over five. Indicator is much lower than that, but I don't know. I mean, they haven't named anyone there, and obviously they might trade him at some point. I haven't had a problem drafting Trevor May, even though he has been also horrible in spring, which isn't a good sign. But also Danny Jimenez has been too. He's throwing like 89 in spring. He's not looking good. Domingo Savato doesn't have a super high K rate. They still got Zach Jackson in the mix, but I do like May if you're kind of shopping in that tier, but he even goes later than those guys, right? Like you mentioned Evan Phillips, for example. He just based on his pure stuff alone, even the fact that he's not going to be closing and the fact that you got Daniel Hudson probably starting on IL. I mean, people are just kind of betting on talent, but that can also be a dangerous game. You wait on closers and you're just drafting for talent, and you draft Duran and Munoz and Phillips. I don't know how many saves you're going to get there.
Yeah, you're holding your bleep in your hand and you're ending up cutting somebody like Evan Phillips after week one or two or whatever. And you're looking back like, oh man, I really wish I had Trevor May, even though he's on the A's. There's a lot of guys just in the next tier. Let's get to the rounds 21 to 30. Who are we? Last year, if you had Edwin Diaz, Emmanuel Clase, this could have been your RP2 if you waited. And that's kind of what I like to do. I want to get the Josh Hader. I want to get Jordan Romano. I want one of those guys. And then I'm hoping to hit. Last year, it was Tanner Rainey for me until he was hurt. So let's say this year it's a Trevor May, post 300 ADP. if he's working out and then ends up getting traded, you cut bait, you move on, and then you have to start playing the fab game. But at least the fab game isn't costing as much. That can be a nightmare because you're wasting fab far too early, because especially after the first week or two, Vlad, you know, when you do your fab articles, if there is a team with an uncertain landscape and we do see a highly unrostered reliever get a save or two within the first week, 10 days of the season, you're now writing up the potential of this guy having a triple digit bid, right? And we don't even know who the fucking guy is, but he got two saves. So the guys that I like, he could be one. He's popular to everybody now, I guess. January 25th, I tweeted about Reynaldo Lopez potentially being the dark horse to be the closer for the Chicago White Sox. I still think that that is a potential to happen. We've now seen two seasons in a row since the White Sox have removed Reynaldo Lopez from trying to be a starter into this relief role, and things have only gotten better and better. So last year we saw a career high in a bunch of metrics. So the K minus walk rate was above 20%. The whip was at 0.95 for the second consecutive season. Sierra 3.02, FIP 1.93. He allowed a 5% barrel rate. The O swing rate was 36.4%, swinging strike rate up to 14%. And then the average fastball velocity was at 97.1 for Reynaldo Lopez. When I tweeted that, and it's not that I moved the market, but just as the draft season moved on and people start to decipher through, you know, depth charts and, you know, the skills and whatnot, Kendall Graveman was going a lot earlier in ADP. And at the time, Reynaldo Lopez ADP was 466. Now it's at 332. So he's jumped eight rounds or so since January, mid-January. And Kendall Graveman's kind of been trickling down since then.
But ever so slightly, by the way. That's the funny part, is Lopez has bumped up considerably and Graveman's only dipped just a little bit. So there's still a lot of Graveman supporters.
Yes, and they are getting closer. So their ADP gap now is about two rounds. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm still going to take the discount if there is one, and take my shot on Lopez. And then the other guys that I like, Jason Adams. So I like P. Fairbanks, but you know what? If you are somebody that does have some skepticism of the Rays way, then you should be buying into Jason Adam. If he is going to get a tiny bit of saves, let's say it's 20% of the saves, he can have some usability. You know, he could potentially cop some late inning wins in those high leverage situations, potentially pitching some back-to-backs. I'm not necessarily confident in Fairbanks getting back-to-back opportunities because we've seen the previous injury history with him. So Jason Adam, I think, is viable. AJ Puck, I really, really like. He pitched, I believe, today. So he's now, air quotes, he's healthy. But it wasn't the shoulder injury that he was missing time with in Miami. So Miami traded for Jesus Luzardo last year, sprinkled some fairy dust on him, corrected some things. Look at Luzardo now, albeit there has been some injury problems in the past for Luzardo and Puck. But I do believe that they could turn AJ Puck into some sort of monster. Now, Skip Schumacher's a new manager, so we don't really know what he's going to do. They kind of have this meh kind of bullpen right now in Miami with Dylan Floro leading the way at the top. We've seen Floro lead the team in saves last year, but then he lost the job to Tanner Scott. Tanner Scott's still in the bullpen. Matt Barnes, they acquired this offseason, and he's had previous experience in Boston, but he kind of sucks. The two guys that I like would be AJ Puck, and then I've got a really, 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 really deep dart. So if he ends up getting, let's say, remember we were talking about earlier, the guy, the random dude that gets one or two saves at the beginning of the season, who the fuck is that guy? Remember Richard Rodriguez for the Pittsburgh Pirates?
You
get him in round 51 of Draft Champions. Boom, boom, boom. There's only 50 rounds. I think that he could potentially be a guy that gets saves for Miami as well. So those are some guys. And then I can't just keep going on about every team, but this is our podcast, so I might as well say it because people don't really listen to what I say anyways. But my highest rostered player right now, take this for what it's worth or however you may, it is Bruised Our Gratterall. So I'll leave it at that.
I mean, listen, there's an opportunity here. Evan Phillips in the mold of Duran and Munoz from Minnesota and Seattle is really best utilized in a multi-inning and in a batter in high leverage situations in the eighth inning. He will get save opportunities, absolutely. I think when Daniel Hudson comes back, if he's healthy, I think he will get some. But Brusdar Graterol, man, he's been getting it done for years. He's a very reliable reliever. What we do know is that Dave Roberts does not want to name one guy. He even said, like, spring training is not the place for me to figure out who the closer is, which is really funny. Obviously doesn't help us fantasy folks, but that's where it is. And absolutely, I think, as a 27th round dart, especially where in those late rounds are a good place to just kind of take a stab at those guys who could potentially get saves, so you don't have to spend a lot early in the season in FAB. I do agree that that he should be one of those names. The other couple spots that we did not mention, one is the your hometown, right near you, Chicago, the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah.
They are a report today on March 14th, as we record, is that it'll most likely be Michael Fulmer and Brad Boxberger, a couple of veterans, basically looked at as the primary options to be the closers. That's the report from Patrick Mooney of The Athletic. And I mean, Fulmer, you know, former starter turned reliever, he obviously used to pitch for the Tigers and obviously in a much better spot this season. Really only issue with him last year, he's not the biggest strikeouts guy, 22% last season. Even during his heyday as a starter, he was, you know, kind of a 17 to 19% guy. And then same thing, walk rate around 10%, but he could definitely grab the role there. Brad Boxberger, a solid veteran as well. And then the one other situation, I think for the most part, this is like the one team where in main event drafts, there won't be anyone drafted here among the relievers. And that's the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah.
No, I mean the Diamondbacks. you got two lefties, most likely not going to get many save ops, though it could happen. It's Andrew Chafin, who recently signed with them. Joe Mantiply, their lone all-star last season. And then you got some righties. Kevin Ginkle, the guy who was supposed to be the closer of the future. And he, when he was healthy, he actually was pretty good down the stretch last season. Mark Melancon, who's been horrible in camp. I think he's toast. And then there's a little another guy who's actually been the Japanese League leader in saves over the last two seasons. He's 33-year-old Scott McGough. I don't know if he's going to be drafted much in the mains, but I think he's somebody to keep an eye on. So for the most part, it's probably an avoid. Roster resource lists five guys at closer. McGough isn't even one of those guys. Castro is. So I don't know. I don't really see much reason to invest there, nor to overspend during the season in FAB on these guys.
Yeah. Lavolo, right? Manager.
Yeah. Torrey Lavolo.
Fickle as well. So he's kind of, when you listen to him speak in post game interviews or whatever, he wants to be the smartest guy in the room. And I'm not a big fan of him, and I don't like the way he manages. So he can keep outsmarting everybody and finishing third or fourth in the division. That's fine. Michael Fulmer, you did mention, I like that. Him and Boxberger do have the experience. So if we do see one of them kind of peel each other apart and David Ross chooses one, you could be in for a boring, one of those RP2 boring relievers that get you 20 plus saves. We've seen it time and time again. I thought I was the smartest guy in the room a couple years ago, the first year at FTN Fantasy, and I was hosting a live stream during a main event. And Eno Saris and I were talking, you know, players going off the board, and Phil Dussault had selected his second relief pitcher in the fifth round. So two relief pitchers in the first five rounds, and Eno didn't know who Phil was, and I was just kind of crapping all over Phil's roster construction. Eno's like, who the fuck is this guy? And lo and behold, we all know who Phil Dussault is now, the champ. But Alex Colome is that example of a Michael Fulmer, albeit you don't have to draft him in the fifth round, etc. This was in 2020, and Phil's model, it worked. But there are relievers like that Alex Colome. It's like, wow, this guy sucks. He's not good, but he's the closer. The manager tendency is a long leash. It is what it is, man. It's boring and it's gross, and you might make fun of it, but at the end of the year, those guys can return a massive amount of profit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And quick shout out. I do have to give a shout out to the original Scott McGough truther, if he does in fact come to fruition, and that's Derek Van Riper.
Nice.
So what up, Derek? If you do listen, Brandon Hughes, by the way, on the Cubs, forget him. He's the only lefty in the pen. Yep. He shouldn't be drafted in main events. He will not really be getting save opportunities. And then I did kind of want to, I don't know if you have any last thoughts, but I did want to mention two guys we sort of skipped over. And these are two guys I'm done with. I'm just not interested in. And hey, if I'm proven wrong, so be it. I feel like there's so many ways to just skin the cat. Actually, I don't know if we can say that in 2020.
Peel an onion, man. Come on.
Peel an onion. Okay, sorry. Yeah. What is 1920? Kirk Kimbrell, he's done to me, man. I think Sir Anthony Dominguez is such a superior pitcher. I think Craig Kimbrell, we watched it in person last season. Even a great reduction in strikeout rate down to 27%. Walking guys through the moon, just unreliable as heck. And then Aroldis Chapman, man, I mean, he's just, I don't let the personal bias me in fantasy. If he's a good player, you know, hey, I'll draft him even if he's a, you know, piece of shit. But I don't know, man. I think Scott Barlow is much better. I think Chapman might have a little bit of a stretch where he's kind of teases and, you know, maybe he gets dropped and then has a nice little run and picks back up. But I think at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to end well for Aroldis Chapman in 2023.
Phillies closer, hot take, Jose Alvarado.
Wow. Okay.
Or at least he finishes with the most saves in Philadelphia.
I love it. The hot yep. take it up.
Yep. Got to give the people something, right? When we're dumpster diving here, these are the guys. I mean, you add them in round 29, 30, doesn't work out, you cut them. But I think he could potentially be the guy they brought in, Gregory Soto. I don't think Soto is going to close, but he's a lefty and that helps kind of remove Alvarado from being that sort of loogie or specialist. Mm-hmm. We saw a career high spike in strikeout rate at 37.9%. He does walk guys, but we saw a career low home run to fly ball rate at 0.35. He's absolutely nasty. It's just the command and control, but his stuff and the swing and miss and the whiff rates and velocity is really, really good. So Sir Anthony Dominguez, I believe his velocity's down. Craig Kimbrell hasn't looked good as well. He doesn't need to be in reserved as the lefty role either. That can be Soto. That can be sixth, seventh inning, eighth inning Soto if it, you know, mix and match. So Jose Alvarado in 15 saves in 2018, 19 combined, and then seven in his first 2 years with Philly.
One last thing before we head out here is make sure when you are drafting, you're in the main event or the OC or whatever, wherever it is you drafting, make sure you account for that first half week of the season. There at the end of March, early April, it's the 4 days, Thursday through Sunday, that you do have the nine pitcher spots selected, and you have it planned out beforehand where you know the schedules. So if you do need to draft a reliever towards the end just to fit in, take a look at who has four games versus three games and who you might fit in. I believe like the Houston Astros, for example, Rafael Montero might be somebody you can grab there at the end and just kind of fill in for the weekend. Maybe you get a lucky save or a lucky win or something like that. But do that homework, do that extra time so you're not stressed, especially if you're doing a live main event. You're sitting there drafting at the end trying to figure things out, and then you can't fill that roster spot. So make sure to do that.
Great call. I actually leave the main event usually with a fourth reliever, specifically just to use that first weekend. I don't care about the job, the role, uncertainty. Maybe he does end up with a save and ends up being the closer, right? Like, you could strike gold there. Just draft a guy with the best stuff. Don't even worry about this. Volume, yes, worry about volume, but schedule, matchups, park. Draft the guy that least amount of competition with the best amount of stuff. And at least you'll use them the first weekend, and hopefully they can fall into a cheap win or potentially become a closer that you, got lucky on. It's almost St. Patrick's Day. We need some luck, baby. And it's your birthday.
Yes, today.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Next week when you catch us, it'll be our last show before we head out to Vegas. We'll have some strategy talk. We'll cover some news and just things that are going on that you're going to need to know as we head into the big weekend of drafting. So thank you very much. That concludes our series on NFBC positional tiers and positional tiers in general. For Matthew, Maddie Wood Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at @_MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.